This is the Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. For more information about the Communication Research Podcast and the Communication Research Center, go to www.bu.edu/com/crc. Okay, so welcome everyone to the latest installment in the Communication Research Center colloquium series. Today we have our newest member presenting, that's Byung-Jun Shin, and he's currently an adjunct professor in our department and also teaching in the Comm Studies program at UMass Boston. Also, he is the first inaugural recipient of the James Carey Urban Communication Award from ICA. His doctoral dissertation from University of Wisconsin was federally funded by the Doctoral Dissertation Research Grant Program from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And the topic of his presentation today is called Communication Ecology and Urban Politics, the Case of Low-Income Housing Policy. Welcome, Young.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming in this beautiful weather. Okay, thank you for your good introduction. I'm Byung-Jun. I'm a new part-time faculty member at BU. And I'm happy to join your Center for Communication Research. And today I'll talk about my dissertation project. It was done recently. And it was about title is Communication Ecology and Urban Politics. Let me briefly explain the nature of my this research. This one is a sociological and inductive communication research. So my main goal was to develop a theoretical framework to understand urban politics and public communication. So I'm talking about an arrow. It's an interplay between urban politics and public communication, and its impact on policy formation. And also talk about how mass media are engaged in interplay between urban politics and public communication. The reason why I tackle this issue is quite simple, because most political social scientists focus on these demands, power struggle. But communication scholars usually tend to focus on public communication, the messaging, the effect of messaging. What I found that these two dimensions always come together, because urban politics ultimately entails the struggle in communication for public legitimacy. Think about our current situation, the President Obama's healthcare bill. It's been created by politics, bipartisan politics, and also public communication among the stakeholders. So my central argument is that public policy is a social product from the interplay between urban politics and public communication. For substantive research issue, I focus on housing and housing policy because, as we know, housing is very important in our national economy and the quality of our individual life. As you can see, our current economic crisis is driven by housing, the bubble of housing market, right? So, and the quality of life is hugely influenced by our housing, as you can experience. When we was in graduate school, we have some bad housing apartments. So I was very depressed when I was in graduate school. And typically when I was in Michigan State, I lived in the university housing right close to the railroad. So it's too loud. And the U.S. typically U.S. housing policies is quite related with suburbanization and discrimination against social, economically marginalized people. So here is low-income housing policy, including zoning. It's a legal tool that pressures housing developers to set aside a portion of a new developing unit for the low-income housing household at all below market price. Okay. So Madison has enacted the inclusionary zoning ordinance, but it was quite controversial. And other cities that enacted the inclusionary zoning, they also had the similar kind of controversy, because it is a very, very different stakeholders engaged in this policy formation and implementation. And here is my overarching research question. How has the interaction between local politics and policy debate on both mass and social media affected Madison's low-income housing policy formation? In addition, there is a lot of detailed research question, but I can't get into the detail today because it's quite short time. But so, that's why I can't show the big picture today, okay? I can't get into the whole detail. So here is my theoretical background. For urban politics dimension, I use the late French sociologist Pierre de Bourdieu's field theory. I assume everybody know Bourdieu, but I'm just explaining a little bit about him just in case. Bourdieu is a famous foundational sociologist. He's focused on social stratification and dominance. He is famous for his theory of cultural capital and social capital, habitus, field, and maybe symbolic violence. And according to Bourdieu, field is a kind of a social space and arena where people maneuver and struggle for desired resources and power. So think about like a professional field of journalist, and field of fashion designer, and field of other fashion models. That kind of social space is a field. And field is the most important thing is field is a flexible research concept to access our social research domain. Okay? So I'm using the concept of field to investigate local urban politics, the field of local urban politics. And because why I'm using the Bourdieu's field theory, I know there is a lot of urban politics theories, like Freud Hunter's elite theory, and the famous one is Robert Dahl's. His communication scholars know Robert Dahl he's very famous in the communication field. Pluralist theory, but they are focused on micro-level urban politics between elite groups, like economic elite and political elite. What I'm trying to make a major micro-level of urban politics using Pierre Bourdieu's field theory. And for the second of a public communication dimension, I'm using the famous German scholar Jürgen Habermas' public sphere. As you know, public sphere is a sphere of private people who come together, articulate their public opinion with critical and rational debate. But his theory is quite large, huge, and is quite normative. So people use his theory as like a theoretical debate. I'm trying to use his theory as a kind of empirical way. So I'm localizing, I'm modifying his theory to understand the public communication at local level. And finally, for mass media dimension, I'm using Irving Goffman's framing theory. As you know, framing is a kind of a sense-making schema to understand the world. But the framing theory has been developed theoretically and methodologically diversified, right? So I'm using frame as a theme by journalists, selected theme by journalists for understanding how issues are covered. So it's a kind of a sociological macro construct, which is similar with the example of William Gibson's work. So in order to understand the multiple level, multiple dimension of interplay, I'm using multiple research method. For urban politics dimension, I'm using public document analysis, and I did in-depth interview with key stakeholders, key local leaders, and I analyze political campaign finance report to how the political actors are supported by other community leaders and citizens. And I analyze local business database because I want to see the big picture of the local housing construction market, the industry. Then I use qualitative network analysis about the connection between the local leaders. The reason why I did qualitative network analysis is because I couldn't get the complete adjacency matrix because there were too many local leaders, local organizations, like around 140 I found it. So I couldn't get a survey from them, so it's very hard. It was very hard. So I use indirect way to get connection by hearing from local key local leaders and the public document. And for the second dimension, I also interviewed with some key community leaders who running social media, like a blog and website. And I did the social media content analysis by semantic analysis. I'm going to explain this in detail later. And for mass media dimension, I did mass media framing analysis, but it is done by both qualitatively and quantitatively. I'm using Galois-Leros analysis. Galois is a French mathematician, as you know. So it's Galois-Leros is a kind of showing the network duality of the social network. So how actors and events are connected, okay? I'm going to explain later in detail this method. So let me briefly describe my research domain, C-level medicine. Medicine's population is about 231,900 people. And medicine's metropolitan area's population is 531,500. And in terms of ratio is quite white dominant community. And in addition, there are 5% of black, 5% of Asian, and 4% of Hispanic. And the politics and medicine is historically influenced by U.S. progressive political movement. So, and the economy is, there is a state government and UW Medicine, they are two big economic engine for the local economy. And due to the high land price, affordable housing is a big issue in medicine. And through the document analysis and qualitative media content analysis, I found that the issue has been unfolded through three phases. The first phase is it was the inclusionary zoning was introduced as a mayoral election issue. But there are different mayoral candidates who have different ideas about inclusionary zoning and affordable housing issue. Anyway, there was a local environment, the leader of local environmental association, who is very liberal and progressive, he was elected as a mayor. So he, in the second phase, he introduced mandatory form of inclusionary zoning program. That means the developers should follow the rule, okay? So it was very controversial. Some opposing city council members and some developers proposed different form of program policy. It's a voluntary form of program policy. So they can participate if they want, okay? There is a big debate and struggle among these two types of policy. But eventually, the mayor's mandatory form of inclusion zoning was passed. city was enacted. But after, even after the law was enacted, the controversy continued. Because in the third phase, the last phase, there was a local apartment owners association groups filed a lawsuit against the city government. And some opposing city council members tried to repeal the law. But the law was, the lawsuit was successful, so the included zoning was partially struck down. But the repeal attempt was failed. And the local developers, non-profit and profit developers, anyway, some of the local developers followed the program and actually construct the included zoning unit and sold, but it was very few. So law was, it was failed to provide enough approved housing. So it expired without renewal in 2009, last year. So I selected some key community leaders involving the issue, the mayor, and there is interesting two people, two city council members. One is Brenda Conkel. She is very progressive older, and she is a key person. She is the architect to develop, to draft the inclusive zoning. And there is a conservative city elder, Jeff Brandon. And the Brenda Conkel represents a socioeconomically, culturally diverse district. And she was running two nonprofit organizations, social justice and affordable housing issue. And Jeff Brandon, the conservative elder, he is self-described radical centrist. And he was running a local laundry business. And there is some interesting organization, it's a local developers ad hoc lobbying association, Smart Growth Medicine. And they are very, very influential to fail the program. And actually the term smart growth is quite deceptive and it's kind of arrogant, because smart growth is a term that used by community-based urban planning movement. So they are very brave to use this term, as they think they are the man who actually lead the urban growth in Madison. And there is another association, South Central Wisconsin Apartment Association. They are the Association of Apartment Owners. And there's another association composed of the local developers. And here is Pro-IZ Coalition Network. So the center is Conkel, the progressive elder. And she was connected with progressive city councilman. And she is a member of Progressive Dennis, a local progressive political party. And she is a member of Wisconsin Green Party, another progressive party, political party. And she was running Tanner Research Center. It's a nonprofit organization and affordable housing. And she is connected with, supported by nonprofit developers and a lot of citizens. But here's another, the different figure. Conservative politician Jeff Brandon. He is connected with conservative city councilman and also smart growth medicine and local commercial developers and other realtors and other commercial associations. So I found that in terms of urban politics, I found that there is a weak pro-IZ coalition network between the progressive politicians and civic activists. But I found that there are strong anti-IZ coalition network between conservative politicians and major developers. They are very strong and they actually incapacitate the program by controlling the actual local developers' participation in the program. And interestingly, there's alternative groups. Some activists oppose the law. For example, there is a local historic building preservation association. They oppose the law because the law might help destructing historical building. So they oppose the law. But there are some developers, commercial developers, support the law because the law helps them to make a profit by more cheap housing units. And this is a model of field of open politics I developed. So there is in the field of open politics, there are three subfields of open politics. First one is local politics. It's a range of political actors, like a local branch of government, executive and legislature and judicial branch of politicians. And there is another civic groups, subfield civic groups. It's a range of associations from local community association, neighborhood association, to religious association, and social clubs. And there is another subfield, interest groups. It is different from civic groups because they operate primarily based upon the material interest, and they in a way of a strategically goal-oriented way. So they are in this context, they are two different entities. And the second dimension, the public communication on social media, I found that there are a lot of civic organizations, 33, but they don't actively participate in the public community or the party debate. But I found that there are two conflicting figures, politicians, they are actually participate in the party debate through their blogs. And I found that an alternative local online publication media. Here is a blog from the progressive city elder, Brenda Conker. She was running three blogs. So she's a very interesting person. She got a law degree and she's an expert in the housing law. So she has a very professional knowledge about the law. And she is very actively investigate the issue. So she's working like a citizen journalist. And her article is about quite investigative report. And here is another the conservative city owner's blog. Actually, he was using this blog to attack the progressive city owner. Can you see that this the title? Hypocrisy equal beef minus action. It was talking about the progressive city elder. So he using the blogs attacked her. And here's another alternative online news local communication media. It covers local cultural issues. It's very progressive media. So in terms of this table shows the progressive see all the concal dominate the public communication in terms of the inclusion zoning issue. She produced about 50 articles, and in contrast, the conservative city elder just produced 5 articles. And the online publication media produced 18 articles. But in terms of cementing network, I found that the Conker, the progressive city elder, she's producing more like frames, social remedy, social benefit, anti-free market frames. But she didn't use social justice and progressive idea. Well, in the mainstream media, I found that the mainstream media is trying to connect her with some social justice and progressive ideas. So she was like intentionally avoid these frames because she is already framed by some kind of a progressive person and troublemaker in politics. So she was trying, I think she was trying to avoid these kind of frames. And on the conservative city owner's blog, I found that he was producing pro free market frame and anti-progressive idea. And the mainstream media, I found that he was framed by some similar frames like a pre-market, pro-free market, property right, and conservative ideas. So, in sum, the social media space is dominated by the pro-IoT discourses I found. But the most articles is critics against anti-IoT developers and conservative politicians and local newspapers. But I found that the public communication was not only rational but also irrational. And it was contentious between the two conflicting city owners. So this is a second model to a local public sphere. Under the field of open politics, I drew two circles. It's a space of communication created by network media. I mean, internet-driven network media, social media. The reason I create draw a line here, a local public sphere, is that not every social media is not working as a public sphere, right? Actually, the network media cover the entire community, but only part of the social media working as a public sphere. Think about our electronic media environment. There is a lot of crazy internet spaces. The poor space is they work as a public sphere, right? So only part of the network media is working as a public sphere. And also, outside of the network media space, there is they can place a public sphere, like a Facebook talk, political talk in a coffee house and a pub. It's a public sphere. It's a space of public talk, okay, about public issue. And finally, for the last dimension, local mass media's coverage, I analyzed three mainstream newspaper in local newspaper, Capital Times, Wisconsin State Journal, and this month. And Capital Times and Wisconsin State Journal are two rival daily newspapers. And Capital Times, historically, they have a left-liberal editorial policy. And Wisconsin Journal has a very conservative editorial policy. And Isthmus is an alternative weekly newspaper. As you can see, they are trying to be politically balanced. And Capital Times, as you can see, Capital Times produce more articles about the issue. And Wisconsin State Journal produce more editorial policy, editorials. It means Wisconsin State Journal have some strong opinion about the issue. So for the semantic analysis, I found that two overall conflict standpoints, that means I support the included zoning. And anti-IoT, I oppose the policy. And I found the nine pairs of conflicting frames. For example, social benefit and social burden. So some people frame the issue as they bring some benefit for the local community, but some people think that it's a kind of burden to local community, like a tax. So these standpoint and frames working as an ongoing organizing idea of policy meaning and themes. So this is the framework I developed. Define as a tripartite network framework analysis. So in each phases, there are standpoint, right? So as I told you, pro-IoT standpoint, anti-IoT standpoint, some people have a little bit middle range of standpoint. And there is a frames, a lot of frames. And the actors are connected with frames and standpoint. So there is a three layers about framing analysis. And this is the outcome of my analysis, one outcome. It's based upon the capital times coverage in phase one. I know it's very complicated. So as you can see, I1N1 is a standpoint, and F means frames. So and the names of Gorman and Simon is an actor. So as you can see, it's a cluster, right? There's a cluster, but it's difficult to can read the diagram. So beauty of this program is like this. So if we click on the standpoint, it shows how the standpoint is connected to frames and actors. Okay. Yeah. And this is based on Galileo's analysis. As I told you, it's a mathematician. So using like a set theory and matrix algebra. But there is a program to calculate the process. So as you can see, the Z1, the standpoint is connected with frame 3, 20, 21, and actor Bellacres. Based on this sort of analysis, I found that the capital times, as you can see, produce more voices about poor IZ frames. So the number of each cell differs the frequency of frames. Okay, so 55 means the frames that support the IZ appeared 55 times in the first phase in capital times. Okay, and the Wisconsin State Journal produced more anti-IZ frames voices. But interesting, but it's not in the any curation, it's just in the articles. So, but interesting thing is, the Wisconsin Journal produced more pro-IZ frames during phase 1 and 2. But they changed their standpoint, their attitude toward the issue. It's very interesting. And isthmus is almost balanced. And the comparison, the frame frequency in editorial, we show more interesting difference. As you can imagine, capital times produce more frames and pro-IZ frames on editorials. But look at the Wisconsin State Journal. They produce more anti-IZ frames. But from the beginning, they produce more anti-IZ editorials. Right? So the coverage between editorials and articles is different. So I think that Wisconsin State Journal already have the strong opinion in their editorial leadership of both boards. They have already strong opinion about the issue. So the final finding is the media framing has corresponded to editorial policy, the difference between Capital Times and Wisconsin State Journal. And they get more voices from politicians and developers than from civic activities. I think it showed that the mainstream news media consider the issue as a local housing issue, rather than public issue or social justice issue. Okay. So, through the symmetric network analysis, we can create a comprehensive map of policy meaning among leaders. I showed the diagram. Well, I showed all the detail. I cannot today. But roughly speaking, pro-IZ leaders was connected with social benefit and social remedy frames. And anti-IZ leaders were connected with adverse effect and illegitimate frames. So the law is illegal, they think, they argue. The final third stage of model is local mass media space. I draw on another circle of mass media. I like circles. circles in circles and circles. Yeah, it's quite complicated, but it shows that the mass media, the communication space created by mass media, is overlapped by network media. So mass media space working as a local public sphere by providing reliable information about issue, public issue. But not always mass media working as a public sphere. Okay. So and it shows that network media and mass media space sometimes they conflict, they contrast, and they sometimes they complement. My final overall research finding I found that there is strong polarizing politics in policy formation process. But in the policy implementation process, there was strong anti-IG politics. As I told you, the smart growth medicine, they are very, very influential on the implementation process, on the actual participation of local developers. And I found that strong pro-IG public communication and mass media's coverage frames are very contrasting. But I can't find any salient influence on urban politics in mass media, because as I interview the key stakeholders and community leaders, they read a newspaper article, but they don't believe. They don't understand the issue in the way the media portray. Well, interestingly, the key community leaders are concerned about mass media's influence on public's perception. That's why they engage in public communication through social media. So here is an implication, final implication. I found that the media impact on urban politics on policy formation is interactive and ecological. So media and the local leaders are interactive. And the second one is public policy is a social product between the urban politics and public communication. So we need interdisciplinary tool, research tool, to investigate urban politics and policy formation process. And I found that internet is working for informational politics. That term is defined by Manuel Castle. He said on the internet there is a lot of huge information, unfiltered information. Sometimes it is distorted information. It's flowed on the internet to dominate the politics. So I found that the internet is used for urban politics. So public, many people think that internet working as a public sphere, but public sphere is a model of rational and rational public discourse. But I found that the internet, the discourse of the internet is not rational. It's irrational and sometimes it's contentious. So the model of public sphere, I think I argue that it should be modified to include the irrational mode of public communication. And finally, I developed the theoretical model to understand the political community urban affairs. I named it Community Communication Ecology Model, this one. So it's a final model, and I know it's more complicated, but on this, already I showed this model. The reason I call this ecology model is I'm referring to ecological perspective of social science. So that means I'm looking at the society as a social environment. Well, social entities are all connected and all interactive. So this local community, one community, think about it's a medicine, is connected. There are two environments of this community. The first one is national, international, political, and economic system. My research domain, medicine, also influenced by the national economic system, the economic crisis. I mean, it slowed down. At the time, it was not crisis. The sluggish of the economy influenced the local economy. And there is another environment. It's a local and other local communities. Each influence. Madison is not an island. They interact with other cities in the county or in state. So this is the framework I developed as I proposed a research goal. And this is the future research. I found that there are some interesting actors who are working as a bridge. They connect with different sectors, public sector and civic sectors and private sector. It's not a new idea. There is a lot of articles about inter-organizational collaboration to solve the community issues. But my future research is about how to systematically make this model. How to, for example, the people who have power and resource, they know the people how they connect, who connect with. But the people who don't have resources and power, they don't know. When they have issues and problems, they don't know who can connect with. But if we develop the system of how can connect with people, social actors in terms of issue, I think it's a problem solving model in a systemic way. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Yun. Now, any questions from the group?
I have a question, Yun. I wonder, did you look at all at any public relations constructs around this research? And the reason I ask that is because I was thinking in particular of boundary spanning, especially at the end there, when you talk about who has the credibility and the access as far as relating internally and externally.
Actually, there was a public campaign from the local developers association, but I couldn't investigate the campaign because it's a radio campaign, so it's already passed. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't get the materials. Yeah, sorry.
I have a question. You talk about semantic networks of various actors, and would there be a way in the, when you talk about the public sphere, then you sort of suggest that it seems to me you're suggesting there's large parts of the public sphere that really aren't paying attention, right? They're sort of non-active. Is there a way to assess semantic networks through survey data or some type of analysis like that to see to what extent the semantic networks of elite people, like the type you're discussing, either correspond to or do not correspond to what the public is thinking? Does it make any sense to do that at all?
I think it needs a lot of work. I actually, when I developed, conducted a semantic network analysis, I carefully read an old newspaper article. I selected the stakeholders. Yeah. I collect every single stakeholders and their teams. So they try to connect with the actors and teams with this analysis. But I think it took a lot of work. It took a lot of time to.
So the data collection would be too cumbersome for a large.
It's group. Possible, but yeah, it's possible, but it's very it requires a lot of work. Yeah.
This has been the Communication Research Podcast. For more information on other podcasts and other activities of the Communication Research Center at Boston University, please go to www.bu.edu/com/crc.